Well, I was so looking forward to speaking with you, not because the subject matter is so pleasant. It's actually kind of disturbing and scary here. You know, sometimes we think of toxic tech as that kind of yucky feeling you get after being on Twitter for half an hour and maybe reading some of the negativity. But you seem to be writing a lot about biases, people that are kind of at a disadvantage right out of the gate. And I thought that technology was supposed to help us overcome some of this stuff instead of adding to it.
Sure. And I think that it absolutely can. But I think you have to design it specifically with that in mind. And one of the problems that I've seen is that Silicon Valley is largely a really kind of narrow place in a lot of ways. I mean, the amount of, you know, women and people of color who are working there is really, really low. And in fact, there's some new data that the Ascend Foundation came out with last week saying that those numbers are even going down. And so When you look at the sort of narrowness of the people who work there, and you look at the way that they aren't necessarily thinking about people who aren't like them when they're designing technology products, what you see happening is that technology can even make some of those divides bigger instead of taking them away.
Can you give me a couple of examples? I don't know if you want to take a theoretical person of color or a woman or maybe even a trans person. Do you find in either or all of those categories that you're just left out of, say, a form you have to fill out online?
Sure. I mean, I think that, you know, it's only been in the last couple of years that tech companies have really even started to think about trans people in their interfaces. And what you see still online is quite a lot of sites and apps that require you to enter your gender information and really only give you a male or female option to choose from. And I think that that's problematic in a lot of ways. One of them being that most of the time, I don't think that our tech companies actually need to be tracking gender information the way that they do. And then even when they do need that information for some reason, then we really do need to be inclusive of a wider range of identities and people, because that's just the reality of who's using your products.
One of the exceptions might be Tinder, though. Don't they have something like 30 plus different designations?
You know, I'm not sure how Tinder has that set up right now, but what I would say is that online dating is kind of a whole weird category of its own where you do have to track some information about who people are and who they're interested in dating. And so it's really hard to get away from categories entirely. But I think that that's been an area that I know a lot of folks who identify as, you know, GLBTQ have said that dating apps that are targeted toward the mass market oftentimes don't really reflect them very well. And they struggle to find people to connect with on them. So I think it is, I think that's an area that we're starting to see actually a lot more apps popping up that I'm not super familiar with all of them, but that are targeted specifically at those communities because they've been identified as kind of underserved.
I see. So they do seem to be filling a need and at least responsive. I didn't mean to take us down it's a related path, but I wanted to apologize for kind of taking us down that route. What about race? What about if you're a woman who wants to use some of these services, but maybe find yourself underserved? Tell me more about what you're writing about.
Sure. So in Technically Wrong, I talk about a lot of different examples of the way that products have left different groups out. So for example, a couple of years ago when Apple Health launched, they promised that they would monitor your whole health picture. And that's the way they positioned it. And they had so many different things that you could monitor there: exercise, blood alcohol content, sleep, nutrient intake. But for an entire year after they launched that product, it didn't do period tracking. And when you think about, you know, all of your health metrics and all of the health information that might matter to a person, for a lot of people, period tracking is pretty high on the list. It's one of the most common things that people actually track about their health. And it just had been ignored entirely.
Can we talk about filters? Because, you know, between Instagram and all the other apps, there are a lot of different filters and manipulations. And when I say manipulations, I don't mean it as necessarily negative.
Sure.
But you could do a lot to a standard photo of somebody's, you know, head and shoulders. Is there some racism there?
Yeah. So I think that photo filters are an area where you actually see quite a lot of the bias in tech pop up. Photo filters are so popular, right? So you have something like Snapchat. And I love a good Snapchat. I do it with my nieces a lot, you know, send them something with hearts and flower crowns. But sometimes they've had some filters that had some real problems. A while back last year, they released one on April 20th, which is otherwise known as 420, the popular holiday for marijuana fans. And they released one called the Bob Marley filter. And that Bob Marley filter would take your face, your selfie, and give you dark skin and dreads. So a lot of folks are immediately like, this is digital blackface, and this is not cool. And, you know, Snapchat didn't really apologize. They just kind of shrugged it off. And then a few months later, they did almost the same thing again with a different stereotype. They released a filter that they called anime. It didn't actually look like anime, though. What it looked like was an Asian stereotype. So buck teeth, squinty eyes, slanty eyebrows. And it was really offensive. And they, once again, they just kind of said, oh, well, we won't put that one up again. We're just going to take it down after today. But they didn't apologize for it. It was like it didn't quite click that, you know, you are really playing with people's races in ways that are very problematic. Yeah, so I would say that those photo filters extend to all kinds of things. I mean, even FaceApp, which is a newer one this year, they came under some fire because they released an app that gave you the option to do a hotness filter. So it would basically like be you, but more attractive. And the algorithm that they had used to figure out what attractiveness looked like, so how they would morph your selfie, had been trained entirely on white people. And so it kept taking the photos of people of color and making their skin lighter or giving them more European features or narrower noses. And they straight up admitted that that was why, that they had really taught their system what attractiveness was based off of pictures of white people. And I mean, that's a really massive problem. You start teaching systems to look at pictures of white people as being more attractive than others, and you're just re-embedding the same kinds of racial biases we've had in the past into our future.
Did you find that as you were writing this and perhaps sharing bits and pieces with friends or relatives that they had really never heard of very much of this? I mean, when I think of some of these filters, I just think of, like, I don't know, the dog ears or the bigger cute eyes or something. I've never heard of this, and it's truly shocking.
Well, you know, I think that it's really easy if you are what they consider average user, which oftentimes in tech companies, they're really imagining a white man, to not notice any of this because it doesn't really affect you. And if you are somebody who is not considered the default, who's not considered your average user, then you might notice this constantly. And I would say that the reactions I've been getting from people have varied dramatically, kind of depending on who they are and who they're exposed to in their daily life and how deeply they're engaged with technology. But I think everybody, though, regardless of background, has had experiences where technology has felt like it's been creepy and overreach. People want too much information, or it's making weird assumptions about them. So I don't think that's necessarily only limited to people of certain backgrounds.
Certainly. You actually anticipated my next question. I personally have disabled my iPhone so that it no longer tracks, you know, the fact that I go, you know, from home to work every day, the same location. You know, it was starting to get smarter in that regard. Can you talk about tracking? I mean, that's a little more common, shall we say, a more common concern that people have, that our every move is pretty much recorded somewhere.
Yeah, and I think that that's a huge cause for concern. And I think that that feels like sometimes kind of an overwhelming problem for people. The way that tracking is built into the modern web, the modern technological ecosystem, is, you know, pretty alarming. There are so many different data points that are being tracked about you whenever you use something like Facebook or any Google product, which means almost all of us, right? Because who amongst us is not using Facebook and Google? That's pretty rare. And that could be all kinds of things, you know, where you go and who you engage with. And I would say that all exists on a spectrum, right? Like all of these ways where apps and sites are insensitive to you and are not inclusive, to bias and algorithms, to the sort of like surveillance and privacy issues, all these things are really connected. And I think they all come back to a tech industry that, you know, has been overstepping its bounds for a long time and hasn't really gotten a lot of pushback. And that pushback is only just now getting started.
Understood. Well, I wanted to clarify just for my own self-awareness, I guess, that I wasn't in any way suggesting tracking is less or more important than some of the other really horrible things that you've been describing. I mean, as you say, it is all affecting one person or another. And you say it all comes back to the narrowness of the designers. Is that where the solution lies, too? What solutions do you propose?
Well, I think that what we have here is a complicated problem. And so, you know, I don't think there are simplistic solutions. What I do think we can do is, one, the tech industry definitely needs to become more diverse. And I mean that in a lot of different ways. I mean that in terms of who's employed there, in terms of being able to have women and people of different races and people of different ethnicities or backgrounds, not just get jobs there, but actually thrive there. I mean, I just saw this Ascend study came out last week that talked about diversity in the Valley. And one of the things that they found in employment data over the last 8 years or so was that, you know, Asians are very likely to be hired. They're actually the least likely group to be promoted. So it's a big problem when we have people, you know, who are diverse in the room, but who don't necessarily get taken seriously. They don't get into senior positions. So I think that's a big piece of it. But there's another piece that's around also really valuing people from backgrounds that are not necessarily technical. So, you know, Silicon Valley definitely talks a lot about its brilliant computer scientists. And I think that that's great, but that is only one piece of what's needed to build the kind of technology products that we're seeing today that have such complex implications on our political life, on our social lives, our emotional lives. We need people who understand all of those things too, right? So that means social sciences, that means people from the humanities, that means people who understand people. And that's not something that has been a skill set that is nearly as prioritized over the past several years. And so there's relatively few of those people. And I think we need quite a lot more of them.
It does seem that if for any of the examples that you cited, if there were just somebody in the room who had the power, you know, to raise their hand and say something, you could, for example, some of those filters would never see the light of day.
I absolutely think so. And I think that part of it is, yeah, making sure the people in the room. Another part is making sure that they're empowered to actually raise their hand and say that. And then another piece of it, I think, is also just some shifting in the priorities kind of further upstream that, you know, allow that idea to make it that far in the first place. I think that we definitely have a tech industry that has long prioritized making things delightful and focusing on sort of like user engagement. There's all these metrics that they'll talk about for engagement. And those are really understandable. But what they don't take into account is, you know, the impact on people. And I think we need to have, you know, their priorities shift a bit and have more of an understanding of how their work impacts people and communities and make those metrics part of the equation as well.
You know, I would never want to be an apologist for this industry or any other, but could the newness of it all explain some of this? I just throw that out there for the sake of discussion.
You know, I'm sure that's part of it, right? Like, nobody could have anticipated precisely where we'd be right now when it comes to technology. And I know, for example, I just read this article the other day that was profiling a bunch of people who had been involved in some of the early kind of social web work where they designed the Facebook like button, for example, who are now tuning out of technology themselves and deleting apps and having, you know, these tech-free retreats. And I think that that's really what that's a sign of, is people saying like, okay, actually, maybe we didn't want this. Maybe what we built is not working. But the problem is that now you have a tremendous infrastructure that's incredibly powerful, controls a huge amount of wealth. I mean, like Facebook alone is worth almost $500 billion. They control so much wealth, and they're continuing down this path because the kind of really difficult moral reckoning that needs to happen is painful. And so, you know, I think that there's some reluctance to really seriously rethink how our technology is made and how it plays out in our everyday life.